The Hoop Collective is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Baseball is back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch all of the best of the bigs all season long on ESPN Plus, with over 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. The NFL draft is just weeks away, and for the latest insight and analysis on how things will shake out, check out First Draft with Mel Kiper Jr., Todd McShay, and Field Yates wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining us from Boston, Massachusetts, Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys.
Enjoying every second of these Celtics games this week.
Thrilling. Thrilling games, the Celtics games this season.
And joining us from Dallas is Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
Nice performance by the Dallas Mavericks with your other team, the Houston Rockets, on
the red hot Mavs roll into Houston. Chance to have a six-game win streak for the first time all year. Been playing good basketball and lay an absolute egg.
Well, speaking of the Western Conference, we saw Phoenix come up with a big win, overtime win Wednesday night over the Jazz, which pulls them pretty tight on the Jazz play tonight. By the time you guys hear this podcast, the Jazz will have played the Blazers, so we don't know what happened in that yet. The Jazz trying to avoid a three-game losing streak in that one.
And the Suns play the Clippers also.
Right. But the Suns, you know, as of this moment, the Suns have won seven in a row. The Nuggets have won seven in a row. This Western Conference has tightened up, obviously. But guys, here we are in early to mid-April here. I'm not sure how this is going to go. And obviously some of it is injury-based because we don't know what the Lakers are going to look like. But, Bontemps, as we sit here, how many different teams do you think, like how many different teams would you lay a bet on, depending on what their odds were? How many different teams would you be willing to lay a bet on to win the Western Conference?
I think there's five teams that can get out of the West legitimately, that have a real chance without any kind of fluke stuff happening. Obviously, both LA teams qualify for that. Utah obviously qualifies for that. And I think both Denver and Phoenix qualify for that. You know, we saw last night, you know, that was a great game, that Phoenix-Utah game. And this Suns team, I've been impressed with them all season. You know, Chris Paul has really galvanized this group. Obviously, it's a really young team outside of him and Jay Crowder. But, you know, Mikal Bridges is one of the best wing defenders in the league. Devin Booker is one of the best scorers in the league. And DeAndre Ayton has got a lot better at center. And, you know.
Let's talk about the Suns for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one thing I really like about them is their depth. Now, I don't know when we get into a
that's the thing I don't like about
no,
them. But
I,
go
I
on.
I think they can bring some, like, from where this team was in recent years.
Yeah, we'll agree to disagree on their depth.
Like, they just picked up Torrey Craig.
I don't want Torrey Craig on the floor in a playoff series. I think they've got they're solid through six. Seven, if you want to count Saric. I love their starting lineup. I love the development of DeAndre Ayton into, you know, what I would call a winning piece. I love Booker showing that he's not just a stats guy, that, you know, he's a guy who can impact the games in a lot of ways. You know, is become a two-way player. Obviously, Chris Paul is one of the great leaders. Crowder's been great for him. Bridges, even though he wasn't a factor last night getting foul trouble. He's one of the great young role players in the league. Their bench to me is that's the one concern I have with, you know, counting them as a contender. But at this point, you know, based on what they've done, you know, they've earned their way into that conversation.
Cam Johnson, a lot of question marks on that bench.
Who Cameron yeah. Payne is a quality backup point guard who's shooting 40% on threes. You know, can give them, not that Chris Paul's going to sit that much, but, you know, you don't have a, you know, you feel good about where he is.
Do you feel good about playing Cam Payne in a playoff series?
I don't know. He's never done it. That's what I'm saying. I don't know about any of these guys.
Well, I feel good about Cam. I told you, I feel good about Cam Johnson. He's one of the best wing shooters in the league. Mm-hmm. He was, I agree. He was great last night. Like Tim said, Bridges was in a ton of foul trouble, didn't do much. He played 37 minutes, was really good. We've seen Dario Saric struggle in the playoffs with the Sixers. He's not, he's a decent eighth or ninth guy on a team, maybe in the playoffs, but he's probably their seventh guy. You know, Campaign has had this, you know, this year basically with the Suns and the bubble is the only time he's been a good NBA player. I don't feel great about that. Like, I mean, I love their starting five. I'm with Tim though. I think they're probably ultimately a guy or two short.
Well, they've been messing around with their starting five a little bit. You know, they were bringing Crowder off the bench. I think it may depend on but for a while they were starting Frank Kaminsky, who's shooting 41% on threes.
I was like the Heat started Myers Leonard over Jay Crowder last year until it mattered in the playoffs, and then they started Crowder.
Okay, fine, but I mean, this team is deeper than they've ever been. I mean, in the modern era.
Because they've never had more one or two players.
Right. This is a team that hasn't made the playoffs in a decade. So yes, they're clearly really good.
All right. Anyway,
you know, it's a shame. It's funny because Cam Johnson was a pick where people, they reach. Cam Johnson has been a good pick. It's a shame they're getting nothing out of their the guy they picked 10th overall this year, Jalen Smith. I mean, you know, he might as well, just not even be in the league.
Well, we've talked about it multiple times. Imagine if they'd taken Tyrese Haliburton with the 10th pick.
That's exactly what I was about to say. And look, you can do that with eight or nine teams in the draft, but especially Phoenix. If they had Haliburton, then wow. I mean, they'd be really tough. But look, they've got the best record in the league over the last 2 months, second best record in the league overall. Chris Paul continues to make the Rockets look absolutely ridiculous for thinking that he was cooked. To be fair, I definitely thought he was significantly in the decline after his last season in Houston. He's obviously proven that wrong. And Booker is becoming a bona fide star caliber player, superstar caliber player. Matter of fact, the one, some of our internal criticism of the top 25 under 25 list has been a little overblown and, whatever. I was surprised at Booker at 8, and, even Booker over Mitchell to me, there's a debate to be had there. We've never seen Booker in a playoff series, but he definitely profiles as the kind of guy who is not going to wilt under bright lights. He's hit a lot of late clutch shots in his career. And last night was an example. That's probably the highest stakes game he's ever played in the NBA, which says something about, the state of the Suns over the last several years, but he brought it on both ends of the floor.
Yeah. The thing about Booker, he's got good size. So, I mean, he's not, there's guys at that position taller, but like you look at Mitchell and Booker, and those are two guys in that game where, those are the guys who are going to be expected to make plays. Mitchell's become a better 3-point shooter than Booker, which I wouldn't have seen two years ago. But at 6'5", 6'6", whatever he's listed at, he's got good size. He can score on all three levels. He can create space. He's a little bit more versatile defensively. There's a lot to like about him. And, he's, as you said, I don't care if he's missed his last six shots. He attacks. He's not afraid of the moment. So you do expect that. I think Chris Paul has done a nice job this year. I haven't watched a lot of their games, but when I have watched it, he's done a nice job of giving those guys, there's been quite a few games this year where Chris Paul is like, I'm just taking a back seat here. I'm going to let these guys go. He's really more focused on, getting those guys going, getting those guys confidence. And then if it's needed, especially late in the game, he'll take over and, look for his shot. But, and Booker has too. Booker has been, willing to get these guys going. And that's the thing, like with DeAndre Ayton, one of the things about him, is his intensity level, grows and wanes depending on the moment. There are times when, he's, you know, really, really super engaged, and he's like a beast. And there are other times when he kind of turns into a wallflower. And you can see that Chris Paul knows that and tries to, you know, keep him going by, you know, by taking care of him a little bit. And that's the value of having Chris Paul has been huge. It's really been a great fit. But the thing about it is, as you mentioned, Bontemps, this whole roster has basically no playoff experience outside Chris Paul and Jay Crowder. And, you know, Jay Crowder is a role player. And at the end of the day, we have to see how Booker handles that. We have to see how Ayton handles it and Bridges. And that's why it's hard to predict where this team will go.
No question. And that combined with, you know, a bit of a suspect bench, at least in my opinion, it is what ultimately probably will hold them back from quite being able to get out of the West. But I mean, you go through these individual guys and, like, let's say they play the Lakers. Like, the Lakers have nobody to guard, really, Chris Paul or Devin Booker, effectively, right? Like, that's a tricky matchup for the Lakers if that's a series. Like, I'm not, you know, obviously they have to try to stop LeBron, but, you know, Mikal Bridges is a little light to guard LeBron, but he's still about as good an option as you're going to have to guard him. So, like, they have the right mix with that five or six guys at the top of that group that I think they can go toe-to-toe with anybody. And as we saw last night, like, you give me, like, the exciting thing for me is with those five teams in particular at the top, you give me a series between Denver and Utah or Phoenix and Utah or Phoenix and the Lakers or obviously the Clippers and the Lakers. We saw Clippers, Denver last year. We saw Utah, Denver last year. Like, any combination of those series, I think, is going to be absolutely awesome. And it has me really excited, you know, assuming health for everybody for these latter couple rounds of the West playoffs, because I think they're going to be absolute slugfest, and we're going to have at least one of these teams that doesn't even get out of the first round if you have five teams right. That can get that far, which is going to be something else too.
Yeah, the other thing I would say is that one thing about Phoenix and Utah is that they have had good health during the regular season relative to the other teams.
Extremely.
And that's big reason why they're number one and two as opposed to the other teams.
You know, we haven't seen Bridges, obviously, in a playoff game, but when you win national championships in college, I think, you know, that experience means something. And his development, he's one of the best 3-and-D guys in the league. I mean, he's a 50-plus, 40-plus defensive stopper. His development has been huge. And then Ayton, like, you don't see it on, you know, in his stats. You know, he's not putting up huge numbers. You know, he's not a guy who's giving you 25. But Ayton seems to have really started to understand how to be an impactful complementary player. Last night, he really responded to the challenge. He knew, like, okay, we're playing against the Jazz and Rudy Gobert. I have to bring energy. Every time Gobert helped, Ayton was cleaning up on the glass. He's become one of the best screen setters in the league. And, you know, look, the fact that you've got a number one overall pick who's only 22 years old, who is understanding and embracing that aspect, those aspects of the game for a team that's winning, I think that's impressive, because his rookie year, it seemed like he was going to be an empty stats kind of guy. He's the exact opposite of that.
Well, and look, last night, going up against Rudy Gobert, to your point, McMahon, it's not, as we know, it's not a perfect stat. Plus 15 in 41 minutes in a high leverage game against a great team. Like, that's and especially a team that moves the ball a ton on offense, right? Not an easy team to guard by any respect. And like you said, he had a couple huge offensive rebounds late, both in regulation and overtime. Like, that was a really impressive performance from him. And like you said, he has grown in ways I definitely did not expect after his rookie year. And look, if you can have him go up against, like, he can bang with a guy like Gobert, he's got enough speed to at least get in the way for a guy like Davis. Like, he's definitely grown in ways I would not have predicted after that rookie season, for sure.
Well, the consensus, I'm looking at this site that ranges a bunch of different sports books. You can get pretty good. You can still, to this minute, get pretty good odds on the Suns both to win the West and to win the championship. I don't know about win the championship, but to win the, you know, as recently as late March, they were plus 2000 to win the West. And then, you know, they've gone on this winning streak and it's dropped. It's now, I'm looking at this across all these sports books, it's about plus 11 or 1200. You know, they rank significantly of these five teams you mentioned, Bontemps, they rank significantly in the back of them. And I don't know, that might not be the worst bet of all time.
And I get why they rank there too, right? For all the reasons we said, they haven't been in the playoffs in a decade. They have a super young team. They're not battle tested at the NBA level, but you know, these guys are, they're really talented. And you know, and it would be something, right? If in Chris Paul's 16th season, he finally breaks through and gets to the conference finals with this team. Like if that was to happen, it would be pretty wild.
Was in one conference finals.
Oh, that's right. He was in the conference finals with the Rockets too.
Yeah.
But if he's able, after getting cast aside by them, to get OKC in the playoffs, if he can go on a deep run here with the Suns, it would be pretty wild compared to where we thought this was going to be a couple of years ago.
You know, I do think that we need to make sure Monty Williams gets his fair share of credit. And
absolutely.
You know, he should absolutely be considered a Coach of the Year candidate. As much, look, Chris Paul obviously gets a lot of the credit. The acquisition of him has been immense. But this is something that you know, this is momentum carrying over from the bubble last season. The development of Ayton, of Bridges, you know, even of Booker. I mean, I think you got to give Monty Williams a lot of credit for that. Chris Paul has helped. It's nice to basically have a, you know, co-head coach on the court, in the locker room, all those sort of things. But Monty Williams really had this ball rolling, and I think that probably influenced their decision to be aggressive going against Chris
Paul. And Jones, who's the GM there, is a couple of things that have happened to get the Suns turned around. One, they convinced Monty Williams to take the job when he could have had the Lakers job. They basically, I don't know if there was a bidding war or whatever, but they basically sold them on come here to Phoenix, which, you know, he's not had a good track record in recent years. And so they won that, you know. James Johnson did the draft night trade to get Mikal Bridges to move up in the draft, to get Bridges. That was a good move. The Chris Paul trade, you know, they did have to give up Rubio, Oubre, and a first for a guy who was making a ton of money, but there's no doubt that that was a humongous step forward for the organization. Terrific trade. And even Cam Johnson, we talked about this year, they missed a chance to get Halliburton, but Cam Johnson, he was ranked in the back of the first round for a lot of people. People thought it was a stretch. I think he was taken at 11th.
Yeah. 11th pick.
Yeah. 10th or 11th.
He wasn't even a first round pick for some people. He had some hip issues in college. I mean, there's that pretty famous clip of Kobe White being told that he was picked 11th, and Kobe was pretty clearly stunned that he went that high. And look, he's been exactly what they needed, right? He's a stretch four; he can really shoot it. He might ultimately be a better option for them even than Crowder. Like he's been really good. But I'm glad you brought up Monty, Tim, because he has been incredible for them. And like you said, that's carried over from last year when you started to see growth from these guys and. You know, it's been, you know, for a guy who's certainly been through a lot, it's been cool to see him have the success he's having in Phoenix, too.
Yeah.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. The Nuggets were a team that obviously last year made the West Finals, a couple of, you know, tremendous comeback against the Clippers.
And the Jazz.
Really just were up and down at the start of the season. They were hit hard by COVID at one point. Jamal Murray has been banged up off and on throughout the year. They tried to trade Gary Harris to half the league. They finally found a taker and you know, got Aaron Gordon. Michael Porter Jr. Was out for a while with COVID. Now they've got it humming. Like I said, seven in a row as we sit here today. McMahon, the Nuggets are a team that obviously Jokic is a serious MVP candidate. He's having a career year. But since they got Aaron Gordon, you look at that lineup they put out there. Michael Porter Jr. is playing the best. The last 12, mm-hmm. 13 games have been the best he's played in his career. Gordon, even though his touches are down and his scoring is a little bit down, his size and versatility defensively has already made a difference. And, you know, when we know that when Jamal Murray and Jokic are at the top of their games, it's a hell of a 1-2 punch. You know, again, they're plus 800 amongst all these sports books to win the West. Do you consider them a team that can get this done, you know, with this new roster they've got going here?
I think you absolutely have to respect the Nets as a threat in the West. No question about it. Nikola Jokic, he's the MVP front runner. I mean, part of that's by attrition, but he's been phenomenal.
Can he win the MVP?
Yeah, why wouldn't
Hold on. Brian has some hot takes on the MVP award. I wanted to lay him out here.
Why wouldn't Nikola Jokic win the MVP?
Well, he's put up tremendous numbers. I agree. The team is playing great right now. I mean, if they continue to win at this clip, they have a chance to get in the top three. Right now, I've got Joel Embiid number one.
And who do you have number two?
Well, I got to see how much he plays the rest of the year. But, you know, right now I've got Harden two and I've got Jokic three.
We can agree to disagree, but whatever. Fine. Serious MVP candidate, really MVP front runner.
Tell me how you
he's an absolute, like, he's the MVP candidate who's played pretty much every single night all season long.
He's number one on your list right now. If you had to vote today,
yeah,
you'd vote for you.
He dragged that team for much of the season. That's especially true. Early when Murray was in a funk. And you know, look, he's got a chance to fin- like you said, they've got a chance to finish the season strong. Obviously, them winning helps his candidacy, but back to them being a threat in the West, the Nuggets all season long on this podcast, I was begging the Nuggets, be aggressive, be aggressive, be aggressive. You've got Jokic in his prime playing like an MVP. You know, you've got a team that you know has proven that you know, Jokic is a proven playoff performer. Murray, they were a piece away, and Gordon has fit so seamlessly. And what the box score numbers with him really are irrelevant. He's the fourth or fifth offensive option when he's out there, but he fits well because he's obviously an athlete, a guy who can cut, a guy who moves the ball well, you know, decent shooter. But getting him and giving them hope of being able to defend LeBron, Kawhi, you know, who Booker, whoever else they might run into in the Western Conference playoffs was absolutely massive.
I think on the pod we did the day of the trade deadline, right after that trade, I compared Aaron Gordon to Denver sort of being like another Arizona guy going to Denver back in 2012 mm-hmm. when Andre Iguodala got traded there. And in these early games with him with the Nuggets, we've seen that sort of fit, right? He is a better player than Jeremy Grant and is specifically a better fit for this team than even Jeremy Grant was. Now, they certainly missed Jeremy Grant this season, but we saw in both the West semifinals and the West finals, Jeremy Grant had to go up against the bigger wings, guys like Kawhi, guys like LeBron, like you said, Tim. He got shoved around, and he wasn't big enough to guard those guys. Aaron Gordon is big enough to guard those guys. And on top of that, his ability to cut off the ball on offense and his ability to pass and handle the ball on offense really has opened up their team to do all kinds of different stuff. And they have been absolutely demolishing people since he walked in the door with that starting five. And I mean, look, losing Gary Harris is going to hurt at times in the playoffs. He was really the reason that series turned around against Utah last year with his defense on Donovan Mitchell. I will be curious with them having to guard some smaller guys without having Harris there. They don't have a good option to do that. But, you know, I think they got a lot better. Like you said, it's about time. They really swung for the fences and got aggressive. And they're a damn good team that's really fun to watch. And real quick, just because we've talked about it, Nikola Jokic's stats for the season are 26 points, 11 rebounds, 9 assists, shooting 57% awesome. From the field and 42% awesome. From three, an 86% awesome. From the line. It's one of the greatest seasons statistically in the history of the sport.
That's true, but you have to put everything in context of this year with offensive stats, because we're having the most insane right. offensive season in forever. So,
and in the most insane offensive season in forever, let me ask you this. Is there a better offensive trio in the Western Conference than Jokic, Murray, Porter?
No, there's not.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, my thing on Embiid is that the guy is completely – when he is at the top of his game, he is completely unstoppable. He is as unstoppable as Durant. He's unstoppable as LeBron, and in a way that we just don't see. Now, he doesn't set the table like Jokic does with those assist numbers, but he's a dominating defensive
player. I agree with you. I agree with you, but and this is going to be the biggest issue for Embiid. Nikola Jokic has played 51 games, and Joel Embiid has played 33. And if you're talking
I agree. We've got 20 games left.
I know. I'm just saying, if you're talking about the most valuable player, it's hard to be as valuable if you play 20 less games, no matter how good you are.
And but we're talking about who's coming out of the Western Conference. The MVP we talk about all the time.
That's right. Fine.
To my point, Jokic, Murray, Porter. Is that the best offensive trio?
Yes.
In the Western Conference?
The way Porter has been playing recently, I should try to find his last like 10 games. The way Porter
is playing right
recently, like I remember I was having a discussion. Let me put it like this. In the last podcast, which you guys were not on, there was a discussion about whether Trae Young was a max player. Let's just say I got some feedback on that one. Let's just say the phone rang.
Over his last 10 games, Michael Porter Jr. is shooting 58% from the field, 58% from three, and scoring 20 a game.
Oh, good God. So it was not that long ago where I was, probably maybe 2 months or so, January-ish, I was saying, I wonder what Denver will do with Michael Porter's extension this offseason. Well, holy hell, if this is the way he's going to play going home, this is going to be a five-minute negotiation.
Yeah. Listen, either you're going to use him as a trade piece to go get a bona fide superstar, or you're going to pay him, because he's there's stuff that comes along with him, but they've got him at least showing up defensively, and now with Gordon, they can really make it a lot easier on that in the floor. And he's not like hunting shots. He's not like taking bad shots. He's getting everything in the flow of the offense, and he. I mean, well, just the skill set at that size and athleticism. I know,
and having Gordon out there will enable Mike Malone to free him up a little bit defensively.
Yeah.
By the way, Mike Malone gets – now, I know Malone's got a hot temper. I've known Malone for 15 years. Malone's got a temper, we all know. He gets kicked out of a game on Wednesday night in the third quarter while his team's on a six-game win streak. I mean,
it was a heck of an ejection too. I was rewatching that game this morning.
He wanted to be ejected.
Nikola Jokic should have got a foul call at the other end, and he basically ran out and tackled the referee coming down by their bench. I mean, it was one of the fastest ejections you'll ever see, and he was screaming. He grabbed the ball at one point. I thought he was going to kick the ball into the stands. It was a heck of a move.
I mean, he said after the game, something had to stop. I'm like, whoa, Mike, things are going well. Hold on. But yeah, they won the game.
Imagine if they were struggling.
Well, I'll tell you what, the other thing about that game too, they gave up like 28 points over the final 15, 16, 17 minutes of that game and held the Spurs under 100. Like that's not the Denver Nuggets team that we really think about very often, right? One that can actually guard people.
Their bench whipped the Spurs in that game. And, Malone has had trouble at times. Sometimes he's had too many guys to play and has to have difficulty finding the nine he can trust because he's been trying to play 11. They've made some trades and used some of those assets, and it's made some of his decisions cleaner. But, they stay healthy. And, you know, Murray is a, you know, a huge factor. He just gets the way Murray plays. He gets beat up. He just gets beat up.
One under the radar move with Denver too. They picked up Shaq Harrison today and waived Gary Clark. Yeah. And I know a lot of fans probably have no idea who Shaq Harrison is, but he's a super athletic defensive guard.
Played for the Bulls.
Has always had good analytics numbers, and I'll be curious to see if he gets a chance to play some for them to kind of fill that role we were talking about with having a guy on the perimeter who can really guard, because especially on this team with all this offense, if there's a team that could get away with having a guy out there who doesn't really do much with the ball in his hands, it would be Denver.
All right, so even though
I put Shaq Harrison in the same category as Torrey Craig, and that's if a contender either cut him or traded him for nothing in the middle of the season,
also true.
You probably don't want him on the floor in the playoffs.
It's also true. Hmm.
He was on the Jazz for a chunk of the season.
It's also true.
All right, so speaking of the Jazz, the sport book, this consensus ranking I'm looking at has them about plus 420. As a number one team. Now, I got to say,
that'd be much more fitting for the Nuggets.
Whenever you're looking at numbers when it comes to sportsbook and betting in the West, you always got to put a little asterisk on the Lakers, because especially when it's related to Vegas, because the Vegas odds on Lakers are never a good price, because they'll take advantage of all the people, all the Laker fans who drive over for weekends, and they give them bad prices. Many bets on the Lakers futures are not good bets, because just not because the Lakers won't win, but because the prices aren't fair relative to other teams. Still, the Jazz, who've been number one in the West all year, although now their lead is narrowed, but they've lost a couple in a row, still pretty good price at plus 420. You know, the thing about the Jazz, I think, all year long has been, and it's actually, you know, Steve Kerr recently was talking about how he it was a game against the Jazz. He was, you know, complimenting them as coaches do. He said the way they play reminds them a lot of the way the Warriors played 5-6 years ago when they started their run. Mm-hmm. The question about that Warriors team, which is a question about this Jazz team, can they shoot like this when the pressure is on? Because holy Moses, do they shoot. And in this game against the Suns on Wednesday night, they didn't shoot the ball well.
And against the Mavericks, when I saw them, a couple nights before that, they really shot poorly in that game.
But they did get to overtime in a road environment. I mean, you know, didn't cost them, you know, the shooting didn't cost them the game. So, you know, to me, you know, the question I had going into, you know, I was with the Team USA in 2019 in the World Cup in China, which very few people probably pay attention to. The Americans finished seventh. Donovan Mitchell was the heart and soul of the offense of that team, and just like he is for the Jazz. And watching him at that, you know, it's a pretty high level of basketball. It is not the NBA. But, you know, when, you know, that team lost a couple of games. And when they lost, Donovan, as good as he was, struggled. Being able to get to the rim, being able to get to his spots under the intense pressure. And I had that question about Donovan. Well, he showed that he can do special things in the bubble last year with some of his games. He's having a spectacular season. So shooting in Donovan Mitchell, defensively, I think they've proven that they can play championship level defense. I think there's been moments where their perimeter defense has gotten a little shaky, but on balance, you got to love their defense, McMahon. Do you trust their shooting enough? Do you trust Donovan, you know, when it's 2-2 and they need, you know, it's 2-2 in a series and it's a tie game in the fourth quarter, are they equipped to win games like that?
I think they are. I think that with Donovan, there can be the Jazz, when they're at their best, the ball is hopping, it's humming. They're 0-5 this year when Donovan takes more than 25 shots. And, you know, not a perfect stat. There's some coincidences in there, but there can be too much Donovan. You know, part of that is they need Jordan Clarkson to get going again. Clarkson in the last, it's about a month and a half now or so. He's just not been good. I mean, you go back to, I'm looking at his last 19 games, he's shooting 36% from the floor, under 30% from 3-point range. They need sixth man of the year Jordan Clarkson, you know, not extended funk Jordan Clarkson. That's a massive difference. You know, and matter of fact, at this point, I'm not certain that Jordan Clarkson's even the top six man of the year candidate on his own team. I think Joe Ingles is in that conversation, by the way, neither here nor there, but I also think Jalen Brunson has worked his way into the six man of the year conversation.
He's been phenomenal. He'd definitely be ahead of Jordan Clarkson for me.
By the way, I heard that around the trade deadline that the Mavericks got some calls about Jalen Brunson, and it was basically like, yeah, you can, you know, Luka is obviously untouchable, and Jalen is pretty much untouchable. You know, if you're going to offer LeBron, we'll listen, but like, he's being viewed as a foundational core piece going forward.
He I don't know if he's their second best player. He's damn sure their second most dependable player. But anyways, back to the Jazz. I think Clarkson getting him back in the groove he was in will be absolutely critical. And then Bogdanovich is, you know, very up and down. And they need, like, he grabbed a rebound last night. If you're going to be playing power forward in the NBA as a starter, you need to grab more than a rebound in a game.
Well, and you mentioned it earlier when you were talking about Devin Booker, Brian. Donovan Mitchell's like, is a small guard, right? And we talked
about 6'1". They list him at 6'1".
Right. Yeah. And we talked about it a lot when you were covering that Team USA team. That team was built around Kemba Walker and Donovan Mitchell, right? Yeah. Two small guards. And if your go-to scorer is a 6'5" wing like Bradley Beal or Donovan Mitchell or Devin Booker or, you know, James Harden, whoever, right? Those guys can always get a shot off. And if your go-to scorer is 6'1" or 6 foot, it's a lot harder for them to always get a good shot off. And that I think is part of the issues when he, you know, gets a little tunnel vision and shoots the ball. Like last night, he was, you know, 16 for 35. He had 41 points. But to Tim's point, I think when he gets the ball that much, it gets them away from the ball reversing and going around and everybody getting involved and kind of that whirling dervish leading to a wide open three, which is what makes them so good.
Yeah, they call it the blender.
That's right.
They have to have the blender going in Utah, and it has to be about screening and ball movement more than it is about Donovan's individual brilliance, because Donovan's individual brilliance can only take them so far.
Well, and also if they're getting in the blender all the time, then when he gets the ball and is attacking, then the defense isn't loaded up on him, right? And then he can get any look because he is super explosive and he's very good at getting to the rim and he can get his own shot very effectively. But if it's a lot of Donovan ISOs and holding the ball for 18 seconds, then running a pick and roll, then it's a little easier to load up on him and then it gets more difficult, right? So that's sort of the balance. But look, we're also, you know, finding things to pick at with this team because they've been the best team in the West for the entire season and have been rolling along. But, you know, again, like we talked about, all these teams are really good. And, you know, if you're going to get out of the West, it's going to require you playing some really high level basketball for three rounds.
Well, again, going back to the Warriors, who had, you know, some of the best ball movement you've ever seen. The question was, I remember Charles Barkley sitting up there talking about it on TNT and, you know, people getting angry at him because he said jump shooting teams couldn't win. You know, the question is, you know, can you move the ball? Again, game 5, 2-2, you know, you need to win this game to get control of a series. Will the ball move enough to win? And, you know, but I will say about Donovan Mitchell, he's shooting 40% from three on the season. And he has shown that step back is a pretty, you know, vicious move. He has gotten a lot better at developing his all-around game. Like, for example, a lot of people compare him to Dwayne Wade. They compare him to Dwayne Wade because he's a small, rugged bull of a guard. He's smaller.
Although Dwayne Wade was significantly bigger.
Right. But he has the same type of play, which is I'm going to get my center of gravity low and I'm going to change directions and I'm going to use good footwork and I'm going to use jump stops and I'm going to get in on there and I'm going to score and ideally I'm going to get to the line. And all those things. Wade was never the kind of shooter that Donovan is right now. So,
right.
Well, and here's, you know, the other thing too, guys, right? Like, we're kind of talking around it, but, you know, the Jazz also have been the best team in the league all year and don't have anyone that's really in the MVP conversation at all. Right. And as we know, when you get deep in the playoffs, it ultimately winds up coming down to a lot of the time, like the top couple guys on each team. And you know, we don't, you see these teams, you know, like the last team that was really like this that won a title was the Pistons, and that was almost 20 years ago. So that's the other thing that's going to make people, you know, have pause about whether this team can get all the way through the West playoffs.
And Mark Jackson kept on lobbying for Donovan Mitchell to be in the MVP conversation last night. He's not the MVP of the Jazz.
That's right. That's right. And I will say, the one thing I do think
the MVP of the Jazz went 7 of 7 last night.
That's right.
You know.
Well, the MVP of the Jazz has the best plus minus in the league. Yeah. And even with favors, the difference in the defense with Gobert on the floor and off the floor is, you know, elite to eh.
And I wanted to point out one thing that I thought was instructive from that game last night is Gobert did pretty well in space and getting out and contesting some jumpers, at least farther away from the basket than he has in the past. Yeah. And that is going to be a critical thing for Utah in the playoffs is his improvement there, because that, you know, teams are going to try to draw him.
Well, he's actually been elite. He's been elite there the last couple of years.
Well, when it comes down to it and they're playing the Lakers, I'm not saying they're going to start the game this way, but we know that Anthony Davis is going to be the center.
Right.
That's why I see, you know, this debating about, you know, what's Marc Gasol? Is his feelings hurt? They were. I was kind of surprised that they were hurt because, I mean, on this podcast, we talked, you know, about, I mean, not that he has to listen to the podcast, but it was a very well openly talked about concept that Andre Drummond was going to be a Laker for weeks. I'm surprised that Gasol, you know, he acted like it surprised him. Maybe it was because,
well, his feelings have been hurt for weeks.
Maybe, right. That's true. Maybe it was because they promised Drummond the starting job. But when it comes down to it, Anthony Davis is going to be the big man on the court. And so Gobert is going to have the pressure of getting out to space, because AD is going to get out of the way of LeBron to create and the driving kick or handling the pick and roll. And they got to deal with, what do we do? How do we handle this pick and roll when LeBron's coming off with AD? You know, that's going to be the extreme test. The other thing I'll say,
or Jokic. And the last time the Jazz saw as great as Rudy is, Jokic, you know, that funky little wrong foot fade away and, you know, all his other stuff, he can score and make plays against Rudy. And the last time they played each other, that's when the Jazz were on that I think it was an 11 game streak at the time. They go to Denver shot the lights out, but the Jazz started the game with Royce O'Neal defending Jokic and Rudy, I forgot who is guarding, but, you know, basically freelancing, which is the same thing they try against the Mavericks. Jokic scored 47 in that game.
Yeah, well, Jokic is one of the most skilled big men in the history of the game.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so the LA teams, I don't even know how we judge the Lakers right now. I saw that.
I do. It's real simple. If LeBron and AD are healthy, they've got a damn good chance of getting out of the West. Well, if they're not healthy and playing at their peak level, you know, whatever, they're irrelevant.
So the question on the Lakers is this. Now, this offensive season that we're seeing out, I mean, guys, I look at every box score every single night. Okay. And I have them keeping track. I rely on ESPN stats and info for that. I can probably ask them. They'd have the answer in 5 minutes for me. I can't tell you how many times teams shoot better than 50% and lose in today's NBA. I mean, it happens every night. And there are nights where teams shoot 54, 55% and not just lose, get run out. Okay. And one of the things is that these teams are doing very little prep for their opponents because they're just not practicing. I think Harrison Fagan, who covers the Lakers, he's tracked this during the year. I think he said something like the Lakers have had 8 practices since the start of the season, and they don't regularly shoot around either. They just get by on walkthroughs, and pregame, where they come in early and go over their game plan. That's part of the reason. Give the Lakers an opportunity to practice and game plan in between each game. You may see better showings. All these teams may see better showings. But the Lakers have been one of the top defensive teams in the league all year. The question for LA is, can they score enough to beat these teams who are putting up all these points, whether it's in the finals or before that? Because just like last year, their perimeter shooting is spotty. And on nights when it's not on, they tend to struggle a little bit. When nights when it's on, they usually defend enough to really bruise the other team. But, Bontemps, you've been talking about this for a year now. Now, in the bubble last year, they shot the hell out of it. It didn't start that way. They did not play well in the run-up games, and then they struggled coming out of the gates and fell down 1-0 to Portland coming out to start the playoffs when they couldn't hit anything. They did end up shooting really, really well, and when they make those shots, they're awesome. But my question is, I know they're going to defend. Will they be able to score enough to win 4 series in this current iteration of the league?
I mean, that is the ultimate question with this team, because obviously, man, it's right if, they're a much different team when they have their two superstars healthy. But the Lakers are 27th in the league in made threes per game. They're 26th in the league in attempted threes per game, and they're 23rd in the league in three-point percentage. And
Ben McLemore, baby.
Yeah, Ben McLemore is going to solve all the problems. And, look, the Lakers were a great beneficiary in the bubble of everyone shooting the lights out in that setting in Orlando, right? For a team that's probably its biggest weakness was perimeter shooting.
Which was because of the backgrounds and stuff?
I mean, I mean, if you just look at the numbers there, like everybody shot. I mean, Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray were just talking about that series, right? I mean, everybody in that series shot like 60% from three, right? You go through the – and that's – I'm not trying to take anything from the Lakers' title run, but if it certainly was a benefit to them that their biggest weakness was in some ways mitigated by the setting that they were playing in. Like Anthony Davis shot, I think, over 40% from three in the playoffs too, right? Like everybody
– It was 1-3 I seem to remember.
That yes, that's right. He made a certain important one against Denver. I mean, they really shot the ball great. And that was a huge reason why they wound up winning the title, right? They're going to need to be able to shoot much better than they have if they're going to want to get through the playoffs, you would think. Because, again, to your point, as good as their defense is, and it's awesome. I mean, even without these guys in the lineup, it's still been really good. In this league right now, you're going to – especially if they have to play some team like Brooklyn or, one of these teams that can really score it, the Clippers are shooting the ball like crazy – they're going to have to make threes to win. And I don't think, we could sit here and know with their current cast of talent and the way they've shot the ball, that they're going to be able to do that at a high enough level just based off the track record they all have.
Yeah. They, on one hand you say LeBron and AD healthy, which I have no reason to believe they won't be. This Achilles thing with AD, like they're really keeping him, bringing him along slowly. Are they really bringing him along slowly because they're super protective, or are they really bringing him along slowly because he's not at a place where they feel good about clearing him to practice? Cause he hasn't been cleared for contact, at least as of this podcast. I mean, I don't think he's been cleared for contact yet. And, so you do kind of get worried about that, but under the assumption that LeBron is close to himself and AD is close to himself, I mean, it's a devastating 1-2 punch. It's the reason why they're the favorites, but, they're going to have to, I know LeBron talked about, and I actually thought it was going to be this way too. I thought they had a very difficult run to the finals last year, but it didn't actually turn out that way. Lillard got hurt. The Rockets, were in their dying throes, wilted on the vine, and Denver was a challenge. But, this year, depending on where their seed falls, they could have to win three grueling series just to get out of the West, and they're going to have to execute at a high level on offense. It's at some point to do it.
Or LeBron will have to average 35, 12, and 12, which
he very well could.
Well, that is the thing that we need to talk about with the Lakers, right? I mean, they are three losses up on Dallas for the seventh seed. And, you know, they're in a position where, again, we don't really have any sense, like you said, Brian, of how long AD is going to be out or how long LeBron is going to be out. But, you know, if they end up in the sixth, or, I mean, even if they get in the seventh seed and win the first game against, you know, whoever, which they almost certainly would, and get in as the seventh seed. I mean, if you're having to play, say, the, you know, Suns, Clippers, and Jazz to get through the West, or the, you know, whatever, the Clippers, Nuggets and Jazz, or Clippers, Nuggets, and some, whatever the combination is, if you got to play three of these five teams to get through the West, that's the hardest run LeBron will have ever had to get out of a conference.
Well, they're going to, whether they're a seven seed, six, five, whatever.
Right.
Like four.
Right.
They're going to have to beat three of those teams.
And that's the thing that's critical with these injuries.
And then play the Nets.
They've actually done okay holding their heads above the water since LeBron went down. They've picked up some wins, but they're on this East Coast trip right now, and that's a challenge. And then the problem that they've had is that all these top teams in the West have been red hot. I mean, as we sit here on Thursday afternoon, we don't know if tonight's games, the Jazz have won eight out of 10. The Suns have won 9 out of 10. The Clippers have won 8 out of 10. The Nuggets, 7 in a row, 8 out of 10. The you know, even the Blazers, 6 out of 10. The Mavericks just had a 6-game win streak. The Grizzlies have won 7 out of 10. So the Lakers, you know, they win, you know, 4 out of 10. They're eating everyone's dust because, you know, everybody at the top of the West is just – so it hasn't helped their seed. Not that I think their seed is all that important.
Well, it's important.
It hasn't helped.
Look, we've seen LeBron go through playoff runs. You know, last night after the Celtics – lost, Tristan Thompson went on and on about how the Cavs teams didn't care about the regular season, therefore the Celtics people shouldn't be worried about the Celtics. There's one rather obvious thing missing from the Celtics team that was on those Cavs teams, but we've seen LeBron go through the playoffs time and again as a lower seed. It's a different thing to be the third seed and playing Portland in the first round, as good as the Blazers are, than to be the seventh seed and play Phoenix or Denver or the Clippers in the first round. And that's where the seeding matters. Like if they're somewhere in the top four, it's one thing. If they're the seventh seed or the sixth seed, that the seeding matters then for sure.
Well, the thing that would be really interesting is, so the Clippers, you know, the Suns have put a little space between them and the Clippers for 2-3, but there's a lot of games left. If the Clippers somehow end up at 2, and the Lakers end up getting the seventh seed, and that ends up being a first round series,
yeah.
I mean, some things would have to fall for it to happen.
Hey, but could be 3-6, could be 4-5. I mean, could be a lot of different combinations.
That's true. And it would be a terrible break for a team like the Jazz if somehow the Lakers end up in the 8.
Well, it wouldn't be great for the Lakers either.
I agree.
Even in the 4-5.
I think the Lakers would win such a series, but, I mean, that's the thing. Like, this is going to be really hard. Like this is the impact of the injuries. It's not the Lakers are going to miss the playoffs. It's that their road is so much harder than any road that any team, like you'd have to go back to like what, the 95 Rockets probably to have this kind of a run through the playoffs. I think they were a 6 seed that beat a 3-2, a 1 and another 1. Like there's a reason this doesn't happen often. I mean, it's hard to do.
We can't just assume LeBron and AD are going to be back to being the best player of this generation and a top five player.
Ankle sprains, man. I mean, you hear – a high ankle sprain is not a common injury in the NBA, but you hear about these football players who have it, and they come back, like they miss a month, and then they come back, and then, like, the season's over, and they, like, give these interviews, and they're like, yeah – I haven't been right for 3 months you know, it took 6 months for my ankle to feel. And I just don't know. I don't know the severity of the sprain. I don't know how LeBron's never had this injury before. I don't know how he'll bounce back. It's a totally different ligament. You know, those other ligaments that he's sprained, a thousand times. He knows how to treat them. It's a totally different ligament, totally different part of the foot. It's hard to know. All right. Before we go, the Clippers, they're, consensus by the sports books is +240. to win the West, second behind the Lakers. Confounding team, remain confounding team, have nights where Paul George is hitting his threes, Kawhi is making plays, Zubac is in there showing stuff, Marcus Morris has a good night, and you're like, wow, this is everything. And then they have other nights where Paul George fades into a wallflower, they can't get into their offense, and their role players miss everything. I have no idea what to expect from this team. I agree that they're potent. They got Rondo because they felt like they needed a guy who could set up their stars. You know, we won't know whether that works until the postseason. I honestly don't even care what Rondo does in the regular season. I know he's played several blog games so far. I don't care. I know that, you know, that he is dangerous when it matters. I don't know how to evaluate this team, Bontemps. I acknowledge him as a serious threat, but I wouldn't put any money on him.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's funny because we were just talking about how LeBron's Cavs teams never cared about the regular season. And I feel like the Clippers are sort of in that mode, which is ironic given also that their coach is tired.
They've cared about this regular season. Kawhi's played on back-to-backs.
That is true, but they also, whatever the Clippers do in the regular season doesn't matter, right? None of this matters because we've seen them. Prior iterations of Clippers have collapsed in the second round. Last year's iteration of the Clippers collapsed in the second round. This team, whatever it does for the next 6 weeks, the only thing anybody's going to judge about this team, and it's been the same thing since November, is what do they do from mid-May until whenever they're out of the playoffs? That's all that matters. And so it's hard for me to look at them and take anything really dramatic away from them, because until they get to the playoffs, I don't really care about this stuff. Like, yes, they've had issues. We've talked about their late clutch offense. Rondo, we'll see if Rondo is able to help with that. I think he's probably about the best thing they could have gotten at the deadline, even though he is flawed. We talked about the Lakers shooting. The interesting thing about the Clippers, they're shooting 41.5% as a team from three, which is the best in the league by a very significant amount. I think it would be the greatest three-point shooting season ever by a team, percentage-wise. Their offense has been awesome. I think they should have enough talent to beat any team in a series in the West, but they have been kind of all over the place, and ultimately it's just hard to judge anything because until they get to the playoffs and start playing these teams, that's the only time I'm really going to be focused on what they're doing, because the rest of this just doesn't matter for them.
I would say Paul George has as much to prove in the playoffs as anybody in the league.
Yeah.
You know, after
I mean, him and him and Giannis probably, right? Are probably the two guys.
Yeah.
And Paul George is, but Paul, but to be fair to Giannis, Giannis has like had big series.
James Harden's up there. Although Harden has the advantage of, you know, a lot of support, more support than he's could have ever dreamed of.
Yeah.
You know, he can lay an egg or two and they can survive it. And, you know,
he can have a 2 of 11 and survive with if Kyrie and KD do well.
Yeah. But to your point, Tim, Paul George, for as much as this is on the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard has won multiple finals MVPs and won multiple championships. This is on Paul George.
Right.
Yeah. If the Clippers fall flat, and I mean, I don't know what falling flat means. Last year was definitely falling flat. I don't know, like, if they lose like a
finally get out of the second round of the playoffs. They have to get out of there.
If they lose a 7-game grinder in the conference finals, you know, I think it looks differently than if they, you know, go out earlier, or if they lose 4-2 or 4-1 or something. I don't know what's going to happen if the Clippers fall flat again. Because they've made their moves for the most part. They've exhausted, you know, their spending, and they've exhausted most of their draft pick capital. They have some second round picks they can trade. And they don't really have young prospects. They don't really have great options. I don't know. They already made a coaching change. I don't know what happens. I don't think Kawhi goes anywhere, but the stakes, you know, it's not do or die, but the stakes are pretty high, because I have no idea what would be on the table if they fall flat again. And I really can't see what they're going to do. I'm just so hesitant to throw in on them. However, especially if LeBron and AD aren't 100%, they're playing a bunch of teams that have not yet won at this level, you know, and that's the, just to bring it back full circle. That's why if you're a team like Denver or you're a team like Phoenix, in other years, you know, what you'd have to overcome might be difficult ahead of you with those LA teams. But with AD and LeBron banged up, with the uncertainty whether the Clippers can deliver when it really matters, I'd be sniffing some stuff here, especially if you're a team like, you know, if you get those top two, you know, if, you know, Phoenix and Utah get those top two seeds, it means home court advantage in against the LA teams. And that would potentially be a factor. So it's going to be extremely interesting to watch. Hopefully we get representative playoffs where there's health and we get good play, because that's really what we want. But there is reason to really be intrigued by this Western Conference finish.
Are we going to risk the wrath of Rip City and not mention the Blazers at all?
I mean, I don't mean to insult them, but yeah, these are the five teams. I mean, do you think the Blazers can win the West? Do you think they're winning three series against these five teams that we just talked about?
I think they are sixth in a five team race.
And where are the Mavericks?
Listen, the Mavericks are needing to figure out who their second best player is long term to give them a chance to win a championship.
Yeah, I feel like Portland and Dallas are in similar places, where if I'm in the first round and I'm going up against Dame and I'm going up against Luka, I do not feel good about that at all. And those guys are capable of magic, as we've seen in the playoffs before. And maybe they could steal a series if, you know, especially if there's a tweaked ankle or, you know, something happens. But I think there's a bit of a line of demarcation between those five teams and Portland and Dallas, in a similar way to those three teams at the top of the East, in whatever order you put them in, Brooklyn, Philly, Milwaukee. There's a pretty clear line of demarcation between them and I think Miami. And then between Miami and everybody else, I think it's that way in the West, where Portland and Dallas are in their own group, where I would not want to play them in the first round, but I can't put them in that same group as the teams.
Well, interesting thing with Portland is they were, from what I understand, had some talks with the Magic. I don't think they were down at the end of it. But at some point, I think they had some talks with the Magic about Aaron Gordon. They obviously ended up and did a deal for Norm Powell, which has already been a fruitful deal. But thinking about that team, had they gotten Aaron Gordon, and then also the team that ends up getting Aaron Gordon, is your rival a team you could end up having to face in the first round? In fact, I think if the season ended today, that would be the first round matchup.
Would be.
You know, that's an interesting one. But, you know, the price was the price, and maybe Neil O'Shea wasn't willing to pay it. Maybe Orlando didn't like what their package was, and he obviously made a pretty significant deal. But all right. Well, thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Tim and Tim. Thank you to Tony, our producer. Everybody have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.